Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Everybody, Eddie Trunk here with you, and it's time for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday, even during holiday weeks, on podcastone.com and iTunes. Thank you for downloading, thank you for streaming, and thank you for listening, of course, and spreading the word about this podcast every week. Interviews for you, and of course, some commentary and some two cents from me on what's going on in the world of rock. Almost all the interviews you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast originated on my Sirius XM radio show, which is called Trunk Nation, heard on the channel Volume, which is number 106, which you can hear live Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replaying every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, and on demand on the Sirius XM app. So thank you for listening to the radio show. Hopefully, maybe some people got Sirius XM for the holidays. They're just getting on board. Check me out on 106 each and every day, Monday through Friday, in the hours I just told you. And here on the podcast, I offer you a little sampling, because obviously just doing the math, I do five shows a week there. And here on the podcast, that's once a week. So you get a little taste of what I'm doing over on the radio show here. And I hope if you are not already a subscriber, you'll come on board and join me for the daily radio show where it's live so you can interact and get involved as well. Hope everybody had a great Christmas and a happy birthday to Katie Irizarry, our producer of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, who celebrated her birthday on Christmas Day. I should have known that. I'm terrible with birthdays. I think I remembered that Katie was on Christmas, her birthday, and I have a good friend whose birthday is on Christmas Eve, so you guys, I know it's a little rough because your birthday kind of gets a little overshadowed with the holiday, but hope it was a great birthday nonetheless. So happy birthday to Katie. Christmas is behind us already, and I hope it was enjoyable for everybody and everybody had a happy, healthy, usual drill with me, family stuff, staying local. That's how I like it. That's what I've been doing my whole life in Jersey, and it was more of the same this year, but all good. And it's good to be here with you for another episode. Now, of course, we're headed into, and this will be the final Eddie Trunk Podcast of 2018. So a happy new year to each and every one of you guys as well. Next Thursday, when we post our next new episode, well, then we're looking at the 4th of January. We are already into the new year. And at that time, I will be on a cruise. I am leaving on a cruise on the 2nd of January. The Moody Blues Cruise, which I'll be broadcasting my radio show from. So at the time that the next podcast goes up, I will be on board the ship. And I'm looking forward to getting out of the cold of New Jersey, where it's already in single digits, and getting a little shot of warmth, hopefully, there on board this cruise. This is the first time I've done a number of cruises. This is the first time I'll be doing the Moody Blues Cruise. Coming in February, I'll also be on Cruise to the Edge, and also on the Monsters of Rock Cruise, and I will be broadcasting from all of them live on the Volume show I just told you about. Also coming up, the Hall of Heavy Metal History around the NAMM show coming up at the end of January. I'll be out in L.A. for that, doing broadcasts from there as well. Busy, busy first couple months of the year. So follow on Twitter, at Eddie Trunk, Instagram, Facebook, at Eddie Trunk, eddietrunk.com for info and updates as things change and evolve very, very quickly. But that is the plan for the immediate future. as we kick off the new year on board a ship for the radio show. And looking forward to that. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that I'm a massive Moody Blues fan by any stretch. Respect them. Voted for them for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And this will be a great change of pace for me than the normal cruises that I'm on board, which are quite a bit of mayhem on the hard rock ones for me. So I'm looking forward to a little change of pace and expanding my horizons a little bit, as they say, taking in some new music and some, well, not new, certainly Moody Blues around more than 50 years, but you know what I'm saying, for my wheelhouse of music. I'm also going to be posting the usual year-end top 10 lists and all that sort of stuff. You'll find that in the blog on eddietrunk.com. I'll also do that on the radio show. So we're at that time of year where people start looking back and looking ahead, and I'll get into a little bit of that on my radio show and try to share that with you here on the podcast as well. This week on the Eddie Trunk podcast, we have an interview, or I have an interview, I should say, with an old friend who I've literally known for over 30 years. He is a co-founding member of the band Skid Row, Dave the Snake Sabo. Snake came by, I want to say 6-8 weeks ago, because at the time Skid Row were doing some shows through the New York, New Jersey area, and he wanted to promote those shows, which he of course did. Those shows have since happened. But once he was here, we got into a lot of stuff, including the never-ending rumors about the return of Sebastian Bach and if and when that will ever happen. And you'll hear Snake address that and give you the straight answer on that and what his thoughts are on that. Also, something that hasn't been talked about much, and that is the departure of the guy who replaced Sebastian in the band, Johnny Solinger, a guy who I actually just saw a week ago in Houston. And Snake's views on that. Music in general. Snake is, you know, he's a great guy to talk to because he's very well-spoken, and he has a career now in addition to playing guitar in Skid Row, working in the music industry as an artist manager. So we cover a lot of things with Snake in this conversation, and I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy it. It's always an interesting listen when I get together with Snake, and also a fair amount of ball busting that comes with that territory that has also been going on forever. We also include some listener calls because, again, this originated on my live radio show on Volume. I think you're going to enjoy it. We get to everything, for the most part, as far as what's going on with Skid Row, and again, the never-ending drum beat for the return of Sebastian, and also touch on the band's current singer, ZP. So all of that coming up in a matter of minutes with Snake Sabo of Skid Row, this week's interview on the Eddie Trunk podcast. This being after Christmas now, a couple days after Christmas, maybe you guys have some Amazon money to spend. Maybe you got an Amazon gift card or something. You know the deal. Anytime you shop on Amazon for anything, always start your shopping on my page, amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Some items I suggest and picked, and from there you can go on and shop anywhere you want. But start on my page, please, amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get into it with Snake Sabo on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast.
The Eddie Trunk podcast.
Hope you guys are checking out History's new scripted drama series, Nightfall, Wednesdays at 10 Eastern time. It is set in a medieval France, tangled in politics and conflict. One headstrong and courageous Templar Knight Landry will lead his order of warrior monks on a life or death mission to find the lost Holy Grail. If you control the Grail, you control the world. Tom Cullen from the hit series Downton Abbey and Gunpowder lead the cast as the Templar Knight Landry this season. You got 10 episodes that they're in the middle of on season one, and the show takes viewers inside the medieval politics and warfare of the Knights Templar, the most powerful, wealthy, and mysterious military order of the Middle Ages, who are entrusted with protecting Christianity's most precious relics. Nightfall, you got to check it out. History's brand new drama series, Wednesdays, 10, 9 Central, only on History.
Hi, this is Ben Domenech, the host of the Federalist Radio Hour. We're a daily show coming to you 5 days a week from Washington, D.C., where we interview our nation's top journalists, politicians, authors, chefs, economists, entertainers, and more. If you're looking for a contrarian discussion on news, politics, or culture, give us a listen and subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or at Apple Podcasts.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Eddie Trunk, and this is the Eddie Trunk Podcast. My guest this week, co-founding member and guitarist of the band Skid Row, Dave the Snake Sabo. Enjoy. He is also a very, very astute sports analyst.
Yes.
Because he was so on the ball that midway through the Giants game Sunday, he analyzed and broke it down so well by sending me a text saying something to the effect of your defense blows.
I just said nice defense. And it really was. It was incredible to watch. The coaching that goes on over there is fantastic. The funny thing for me is being that a long-suffering Jets fan and thinking that our season would be 1-7. It's great to see that it's your season.
We are the Jets this year.
You are.
I will admit that fully. We have become the Jets.
It's rough for you.
But it is. Thank you, Steph. Again, great analysis. Snake Sabo, ladies and gentlemen. Are you going to replace Frances on the fan with this sort of breakdown?
I should, man. I should.
but again, this is really complete role reversal because the Giants are what the Jets were supposed to be.
Yes, exactly.
And then look what's happened. I mean, it's a complete 180 here.
I wasn't even paying attention to this season before the season started because of everything that was being written and being talked about and bantered about, you know, how awful the coaching is. And not to say that it's great coaching, but it's not as awful as we all thought it was going to be for the Jets. And here's the thing, in all honesty, like I bust you about the Giants and I have forever because that's just the way it is. I honestly like their coach.
I don't think he's going to be the coach much
he's
longer.
He's not going to be. Not in this climate. No way. But I like some of the players. I think it's run amok over there a little bit, and yeah, things have gotten out of control. And
again, the Jets. That's the story of the Jets.
Yep.
I know where most of America probably doesn't care about this, but again, here in the New York, New Jersey area, what is the season the Giants are having was exactly the season the Jets were supposed to have, and it's completely reversed.
And I think that's the whole thing of why, like, I'm not excited and like exuberant about the Jets' future, but we thought it was going to be a 1-15 year or something like that.
Well, you're almost screwing yourself by winning.
Exactly.
You really are.
Which is what the, you know what? Perennial 8-8, you know, 7-9, and you never get the right draft. It's like we're the East Coast, the Northeast version of the Cleveland Browns. You know, we're going to end up with just draft picks that just don't work.
There was a time a season or two ago during the football season that myself, Snake, and Zach Wild were all on a texting thread.
Oh.
And that was every football Sunday, the barrage would start coming in, and Zach would. Oh. Zach is a fellow Giants fan, Snake's the Jets fan, but.
Yeah.
It was, those are some
fun. It was
fun.
The best. I saved all of them because there's so much comedy going back and forth, and it's amazing what you can get out of one Sunday afternoon of football as far as, like, days of comedy. It just kept going and going.
Oh, my God. It's too good. So, anyway, as I was mentioning when, you know, before Snake got here, I just said when you walked in, jokingly, why I bring this upon myself that you walked into this studio and you're sitting here with me. But literally, we have been, and it struck me the other day, we have been doing this, you and I, what we're doing right now, for 30 years.
30 years. Yep.
30 years, which yeah, like in the next year is going to be like, because I have a tape, which I wish I had, of you, me, you, and Rachel from when I was working at DHA, the station you just came from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you come in and you guys are playing a club in Newark called Studio One.
Studio One, yeah, yeah.
And you're bringing in and introducing this new kid you found from Canada to sing.
Yep.
The first, and because I joke around a lot because before I used to see Skid Row and they would be on the New Jersey scene. Before Sebastian was in the band.
Yeah, you played the demos before Sebastian was in the band.
Yeah, and you had a singer named Matt Fallon.
Yep.
And the joke I always say to people all the time is, I'm waiting for the real Skid Row reunion.
Right. We got to find
that. What do you mean? I go, Skid Row doesn't mean anything to me anymore until they have a reunion. They're like, what do you mean? I go, well, the reunion with Matt Fallon.
That would be great.
So people don't know, there was a Skid Row before, you know, the band was founded by Rachel and Snake, who's sitting here. And this guy, Matt Fallon, was the singer. I'm going way back in history now because we're going to talk a little bit about the whole history of Skid Row I want to touch on. But this guy was the singer. And I don't, have you ever heard what happened to him?
No.
Anyone in touch with him at all?
No. I saw something a while ago that someone was friends with his brother and were searching for him, and that was it. This is going back a couple of years, but I'm so out of the loop. I mean, with the way things go, you would think that it would be easy to track him down, but no, nothing, not a peep.
He's kind of like the Pete Best of hard rock.
Yes.
And the reason why I say this is because this guy, Matt Fallon, was he in Anthrax before or after Skid Row?
Before.
Okay, so you picked him off from Anthrax.
No, he was in a band with me before Anthrax.
Oh my God, what, that Agent Fortune or whatever?
Steel Fortune, dude. The mighty Steel Fortune.
See, I didn't know you in Steel Fortune, but you sent me a photo because it was you opening for Twisted Sister, I think, right?
Yeah, well, us opening for Metallica and Anthrax at Willie's.
Which is now Starland Ballroom,
yeah.
Which is where you're playing on Saturday night.
Exactly.
But
Metallica's first show post Dave Mustaine.
No, that was the first show with Kirk Hammett?
Yeah.
That was at the Showplace in Dover.
I don't know about that because they were rehearsing at Willie's. I was there setting up the stage for them because they had just come in. I mean, did they play? Because they were rehearsing every day. And I remember the funny thing was is that I kept asking James if he wanted me to turn on the monitors, you know, so he could hear himself sing. Or is that, nah. It was great. They were just playing music. And also, if I'm not mistaken, they were thinking about, or they were thinking about asking John Bush to come in.
Oh yeah, that's fact.
Yeah,
yeah. So John has talked about that,
and that was right around that time.
Yeah,
and so
yeah, Metallica almost had just a lead singer, which would have been John Bush,
because Kirk just had flown out, like when they started rehearsing in Sarajevo, because you know Johnny Z was obviously right. In Old Bridge.
Yeah,
when we were right there, and I was the bar manager. I was 19,
because Kirk Hammett. I was at the last show Mustaine played with them, which was at a place on Staten Island, the Paramount Theater. I have
That's
the ticket stub.
That's right.
The bill, and if I find the ticket stub, I'll tweet the picture out. The bill at this show was Vandenberg.
All right.
As the headliner.
Yeah, yeah.
The Rods.
The Rods. I love the Rods.
And Metallica as the opening
That's
act.
That's right.
And I was there, and Mustaine played that show. And then not long after, they got Kirk and they played a place which is literally 5 miles from where we're sitting, which is still there and is now a strip club called the Showplace.
That's right.
It's now the Showplace in Dover is now half a strip club and half a really cool vintage recording studio.
Yeah,
in the back.
That's right.
A friend of mine owns it.
Yeah.
So, but Kirk, I saw Overkill there early on. Did you guys ever play there with Skid Row?
I think we did.
And then Metallica played there, and I thought it's either the first or second show with Kirk.
I have to be honest, because they were, like I said, I was helping, we had a big stage back there. It was a banquet hall when it was Willie's. It was just a shot and beer joint. It used to be called the Journey Mill Inn.
Right.
And it was a railroad car. And there was all...
Which is still there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But, obviously, it's a lot different now. But it was just a railroad car. And on Journey Mill Road was Sunshine Bakery or the big factories.
For people that don't know, this is literally Snake's backyard.
Yeah.
Because this is literally his hometown area. The same hometown area as the guy you grew up with, John Bon Jovi.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally this town, this part of New Jersey.
Yeah.
This is what you're painting that scene.
4 miles down the street from where we grew up. I mean, literally down Washington Road and make a left on Journey Mill Road. But the thing was, is that it was... Because of all the factories that were on Journey Mill Road, they get off of work at 8 a.m. They go over there and do shots at 8 a.m. All the workers, seriously, and that's what it was. It was a shot and beer joint with this big, I guess it would be the equivalent of like a VFW hall or something, which now exists across the street from Starland, which is weird. But it was nothing but the round tables, and they'd have wedding receptions there, and for all the Polish folks in Sarajevo, which I am proudly one of. And then a guy by the name of Ed Gadomski and Bernie Bailey bought it, and they started toying with the idea of having rock bands there. And that's when Johnny Z had put together the Metallica thing. And I was like, I'm going to put my band on this bill too. Because, I was the bar manager or whatever.
Yeah, for people that don't know the story, Metallica has huge roots in New Jersey, because even though they weren't from here, Johnny Z, who owned Megaforce Records, who I would later go on and work with, brought them here, and he'd do a lot of things based out of the Old Bridge area, and Metallica was taken under the wing when they had nothing by a lot of people in that area of New Jersey, where Metallica lived with some of those people, the Metal Militia.
The Old Bridge Metal Militia, man. Great people. Yeah. You know, that was the amazing thing about then, is that there was, and I think it still exists, but there was such a great community for all the underground music that was going on. And you always knew you had someone who had your back. You always knew you had a place to sleep, and I thought that was so cool, of the camaraderie that existed. I think obviously still exists.
How active are you guys touring now? Because when I was setting up that you were coming in, I was talking about the fact that you wear two hats. You know, you were also been an artist management for a while. So for you with Skid Row, like, how many shows are you doing on average? Because you were just out of the country too, weren't you?
Yeah, we've headlined a festival in Borneo, of all places. 69,000 people in Borneo. We headlined a festival, and one of the locals was on. The only time I ever heard of Borneo is from like a Little Rascals episode back in the day. Wild Man from Borneo. I had no idea, and it was an incredible experience. Like, a really, really an incredible experience. You would think that just in our idiotic way of thinking that it would be somewhat primitive or whatever, it was not. It was amazing. Everything, the staging, the sound, the production was phenomenal. And the people were incredible. Like a hero's welcome. So it was, to be able to still have those experiences now, at this latter stage of my life.
The twilight years.
Yeah, right, exactly. considering that, I'm in the point of my life now where you spend the first 40 years of your life destroying your body, and then the next, trying to heal it. And that's where I'm at. And so to be able at this point to be able to go experience stuff like that is incredible. So to get back to your question, on average, over the last several years, we've do over 100 shows a year, which is a lot of people don't realize that, there's a lot going on out there. We're going to spend a month over in the UK in March, and then we're going to go back to the rest of Europe for 6 weeks maybe, and next year, and then also tour in the States as well. And we've been doing a bunch of shows with Queensryche, which has been great. It's been a lot of fun. Great band, obviously, great songs. I've been a fan of theirs for a long, long, long time. So that's fun. I get to play with a bunch of people that, that we played with George Lynch the other night, which was great, and his guys are awesome. So.
Yeah, good band.
Yeah, really good band.
Yep, Oni, and you still have Jimmy DeAnda playing drums?
Jimmy's
killer, too. And Sean McNabb is playing bass, right?
Yeah, great band. They sounded great. Yeah. They sounded great.
Yep, good band. So, going through, and we'll take some calls and we'll work some calls into the conversation, but going through the arc of Skid Row, the third Skid Row album, Subhuman Race, which was the last one with the original band and still probably my favorite all-time record that the band ever made. Not exactly commercially successful, but it was 95 and it was a super heavy record. And it was, that's a whole subcategory about bands that I think made great records in the mid-90s that didn't stand a chance just because of the climate at the time.
Sure.
But, you guys always have had, I think, very mixed feelings about that record because it was a rough time for you. The band was kind of splintering. Right.
It was a really difficult time. And yeah, we were splintering, and there was a lot of angst amongst everybody towards each other for a myriad of reasons. It's really strange. We had such incredible peaks of success. It was really something. And I think how
were you ready before? I want to go through like a little arc for a second before we go. But when you go to, and again, my history, and if you're from New Jersey, like Snake and I are, you knew about Skid Row before the first record even came out. For people that don't know, listening around the country, the band was active. They were out. They were around. You guys were great self marketers back in the day. You know,
we did shows on the Bon Jovi "Slippery When Wet" tour. We did three shows with Matt singing.
Wow.
Yeah, we did Stabler Arena two nights with them.
Right, but above and beyond that, like I remember your original drummer, Rob, he worked for The Aquarian, yep. which is a big local paper, which thankfully is still going, and there would always be ads in there, and there'd be softball games. You guys did really cool sort of stuff, before the days of social media and the internet, to reach out and connect people and bring people in. But when you get the deal with Atlantic and you make the first record, did anybody in the band, including you, you and Rachel, the founding members of the band, did you feel like that record was going to become what it became?
No.
It totally took you by surprise. You were not ready for what was coming.
Man, look, the truth of the matter is we had hoped and prayed, like, just let us sell enough records to be able to make another record. That was kind of inherently what I was going through. Obviously, our aspirations were much loftier than that. But as far as being realistic in my own brain, we didn't have a whole lot of glad handing going on. People were excited about the record and, you know, God bless Jason Flom. He was amazing as an A&R person. And Atlantic Records in general were great. They were great, man, because they allowed us to be us. At the very beginning, a couple little things here and there, but really, they're like, we signed you guys because we love the band. And it's like, this is not, we don't need to nurture it per se. You guys are ready to make a record. And our affiliation with, you know, Bon Jovi, and that was an amazing help because, you know, unlike what is like today, we had people who would be honest with us and tell us, those songs are good, but they're not great. That show was good, but it wasn't great. You got to get better. You got to write better songs. So we were being pushed constantly, not only by ourselves, but by the people that we were surrounded with. And that's why we were able to create that first record, because no one was settling for just good. Everybody wanted to be, it's got to be amazing. It's got to be bulletproof. And so at that time, it was. And
what was the most recent really written song? Because for people that don't know, and we were talking about the singer the band had before Sebastian, if you go on YouTube, there's demos and there's videos of you of him singing 18 in Life and some of those songs. Yeah. But how much material for the audience had been playing for a while from that first record versus what was like, were there a couple songs just before the record came out or just when you went in that were freshly written for the record, that stuff was scrapped? Because there's things that didn't make it onto Walk with the Stranger, right. I remember was a song that Trickster later covered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think was there Forever? Was there a song called Forever?
Yeah, Forever. That made it to, it's on 40 Seasons, I believe.
The Best Of record as a bonus track.
Right.
So some of that stuff goes away. You know, here you are kids, you're a young band, you're trying to get the best material, debut record, 18 in Life stays. What was around, what stayed, what was newly written and what was the stuff that was sitting around for a while when you did the first record?
Youth Gone Wild was already written. 18 in Life was already written. I believe we finished I Remember You after Sebastian had joined the band, Rachel and I. I believe so. Rattlesnake Shake was already written. Matter of fact, you played it on your DHA show with Matt singing. We did it in an 8-track studio, Eric Rachel's studio. I want to say in East Brunswick.
Tracks
East. we couldn't go buy a shaker, believe it or not. Like, we were so broke that we got two plastic cups and taped them together with rice. Dried rice in it, and that was our shaker for Rattlesnake Shake. And, you know, 8-track demos. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But the Making a Mess was written after, but the bulk of it, I mean, was written beforehand. And I think we went in to do the first record probably less than a year after Sebastian joined the band. So Most of it was put together, yeah.
And you guys went to Wisconsin,
Lake Geneva,
out of trouble,
Wisconsin. Yeah,
in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that
much.
Was the reason that Doc and Scott McGee told us, yeah, to get you away from New Jersey and being in trouble. But the fact of the matter was there was two championship golf courses on the property. That's the truth. That's the truth. So we were in such close proximity to Alpine Valley, which is an outdoor amphitheater, amazing amphitheater.
Is that where Stevie Ray Vaughan played before he died? Right?
I was on that helicopter a month before that happened.
Wow.
Yeah, man. It was crazy. But we and bands used to stay. Royal Recorders was a recording studio. It was part of what was called the Americana Lodge, which was an old Playboy club. So it had all that, the glitter and whatnot, the silver Mylar wallpaper.
Right, right.
And it was great. And so it was a big sort of resort, and they had a huge sort of like a place where they did conventions, baseball card conventions and stuff. And attached to that was this great recording studio. So Michael Wagner was all about it. We recorded the drums in the convention center, which was right next door, and had video set up so we could watch Rob while we were playing. And but there was two golf courses on there, and all the bands that played at Alpine Valley would take the helicopter back and stay at the Americana. So every weekend there'd be Judas Priest, Def Leppard, whomever, Aerosmith, playing, and the majority of those people would stay at the Americana. And it was actually. We met the Def Leppard guys while we were doing finishing up the record, and they were the sweetest, kindest people that I had ever met. And Phil Collins was so kind. He's like, "Hey, you want to take a helicopter ride over to Lake Geneva?" And I was like, "Oh my!" I mean, over to Alpine Valley. I was like, "Oh my gosh, sure!" So it was me, him, and his mom, and he was just. It was such a great lesson in how to be humble,
yeah,
and gracious. Yeah. In the midst of enormous success.
Right.
And I never, ever forgot that. Not to say that, I mean, we were brought up in a climate, Rachel and I in New Jersey, we were brought up in a climate to be, you be gracious, you know, you be thankful, you be humble. Look, everybody knows I'm the biggest ass in the world, but when it
right, but not, and I'll attest to that for sure.
Yeah,
but I've always said this consistently about you guys because I knew you before you had any success whatsoever, and then knew you through all that unbelievable success with that first record and second record and everything, and then knew you when you're trying to get shit going again. The band broke up. You had a band called Ozone Monday. No matter what. You and Rachel and all the guys really always the same people, always the same people. And I've always said that to people that are friends and some mutual friends of ours that, you know, there's guys that I've known who have started out with nothing and had that arc of success and kind of became some different people.
Sure.
They really have. They even though they'd still be your friend, there was a whole different sort of thing that went on.
Oh, yeah.
Never anybody with you guys. And I could fill hours just with stories of things we've done and hanging out and the Atlantic Records 40th birthday and all that stuff, hanging out at your house back in the day and all this stuff. But it's that to me, beyond the fact of the great songs and the great records that you've written and made, that to me has always been something I've really admired about you guys in the band. And I can say that because I lived through it with you.
Yeah, you know better than anybody. I mean, so you know what the thing is, and this is something, again, it comes from how you're brought up, is what we do, what we're able to do, what we're allowed to do, which is play music and make music for a living, that's a gift, man. That's like one of the greatest gifts in the world. Like I get to go out and play music every night that I helped create. That's amazing. Like that's really, really what it comes down to. And all the... everything that comes along with that, you know, the ups and the downs and the successes and the failures and the money and the materialistic stuff, it really comes back to just being that person who gets to play music for a living.
But something else that I think is really pretty cool is that you talk about the songs that you wrote, and the bulk of Skid Row material was written by Snake and Rachel. And here you are. You're talking about being older and wiser and different.
Oh, I never said wiser.
Well, yeah, I probably poor choice of words there. But you talk about being older and things that change, right?
Yeah.
But now you are in a situation like, and I was thinking about the other day. I'm in the local supermarket, and I think it was I Remember You was playing like over the music system. So you're in a situation now, like, that's got to feel pretty friggin' cool that you have created, you helped to create what is a current generation's classic rock.
It's pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty amazing. It's very humbling, I'll tell you that. I, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, bringing my kids to school in the morning and having one of our songs come on the radio, and one of my kids says to me, "That's you, Snakey." Yeah. I'm like, you're my step kids, so that's why I call me Snakey.
And them playing that song is helping you eat.
Exactly right. Like, yeah, exactly. That's why you get to go to this school.
Exactly right. So that's got to feel really good. I mean, that's, to me, I think that would be something as a musician, to be able to know that there's that legacy and that there are those two or three songs that are going to far outlive you, and that where you're long gone, you're going to, the world is going to continue to hear something you created.
I'm still, and I, it's the truth, I'm so humbled by all of that. It's crazy. Never do you think, you know, never could you imagine, you know, that there would be a possibility. When you're sitting in Sayreville, New Jersey, or Toms River, and you create, helping to create something, and you're hanging out with, you know, your best bud, and you're writing music, you, who knows? Yeah. How can you even fathom that?
Yeah. I want to include the audience in, and if you guys want to jump on the air and talk with us, Snake Sabo from Skid Row is here. We only have till the top of the hour before the show ends, and I don't want to lose track of some things. There's a few things I want to get to. I want to get some audience calls as well. And again, Snake is here to let everybody know, in the New York, New Jersey tri-state area, there are shows coming up, which we just ran down before. Gramercy Theater in New York tomorrow, and then the Paramount, Huntington, Thursday, Long Island, yeah, Thursday, Wolf's Den, Mohegan Sun Friday, Sayreville, New Jersey, Saturday. And then for people listening outside of the New York, New Jersey area, you have dates, or just go to the website?
I think it's on the website, but I think we have one more show this year, and we're going to shut it down and work on the next EP.
Okay, so there's what I want to go to, because I want to go through the arc here. I'm not going to rehash the whole story. Sebastian's out of the band. Three great records. Again, I can't stress enough, Subhuman Race is amazing. If you get a chance to listen, if you didn't listen to it originally, regardless of what was going on in the band at the time, to me, it's a brilliant record.
Thank you.
The band breaks up. Band comes back. You make a record that's a really good record. Really good record.
Thanks.
Speaking of records, if you've missed real good records, if your context of Skid Row is the first two records, which, let's be honest, it is for a lot of people.
Absolutely, I get it.
Subhuman is amazing. Last record with the original band, and really good record called Thick Skin, which was your first with the guy who replaced Sebastian, Johnny Solinger.
Yes.
A Texan who was in the band for that, a record called Revolutions Per Minute,
right,
and then a couple EPs.
Yeah.
Johnny had a long run with you.
Longer than Sebastian.
So what? Where did you, looking back on that particular era and the end of the Johnny Solinger era, what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I say this ad nauseum, but it's the truth. I'm so proud of everything that's existed between 1986 and now. A lot of people, if they're in a similar situation like we are, and we're, you know, we have a new singer and new drummer we've had for a while,
which we're gonna get to that.
Yeah, yeah. They tend to hide from their past and like almost brush it aside. I embrace it. I'm so proud of what we created, the five original members. For we had a period of 10 years that was. It was furious and crazy and awful and amazing and every adjective you can come up with. And it burned brightly. And then it died out. And that's, sometimes that happens. It happens to athletes. It happens to artists. And it happens to bands. It happened to us. We burned out. And so when Rachel and I and Scotty started, it took a couple of years, like you had mentioned earlier, Rose, on Monday, which was kind of just, that was like a bridge gap, you know. We wanted to play those songs again. We just didn't want to put the band back together as its previous form was. And so for us, it was really, it wasn't about money. Never has been. And obviously,
clearly.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, seriously.
Well, that's just it, which we do need to touch on, because there is, we talk all the time, reunions of any kind for, I always say this all the time. There's never been a reunion in the history of rock music that's happened because it meant less money and less people. Right?
Exactly. Really good point.
Reunions are done because they mean a lot more money and a lot more people.
You would think.
And most bands reach out for that carrot. Most bands, that is a driver ultimately.
Yeah.
For you guys, it has not been, clearly.
No, man. I mean, happiness has always been paramount to me, and music is, to me, is, it's what brings me such, has always brought me just this incredible amount of joy. It's what fuels my life. Creating music, being around music. I want to create music and play music with people that I enjoy doing it with. And I enjoy doing it with a bunch of people throughout our career. And then it stopped being enjoyable. The joy was ripped out of it for a myriad of reasons, whatever they may be. Everyone's got their own stories. I take responsibility for my end for whatever that may be. But at the end of the day, you know what, for better or for worse, Rachel and I started the band. It's our band. You know, love us or hate us, it is ours. And we're going to do with it what we want to do to make our lives happier. Being in a band, creating music, writing music is a very selfish thing. It's a selfish act. The greatest songs are written from a selfish point of view. You're doing it to gratify your need and your desire to emote something. And songwriting, first and foremost, is it's selfish. And then you hope you can connect with people. But by and large, it's selfish. And so if that seems selfish, how we conduct our band business and stuff, then so be it. It is ours. I love the fact that people care enough and have a history with band that they would want to see that exist again. I really do. I think it's amazing, and I'm supremely flattered by that. I just can't give it to them right now, and that's just the way that it is.
We got to hit a break. We're going to come back because, again, there's some periods of Skid Row I want to touch on that people might not know about. As I mentioned, the Thick Skin record's really good. There was a record after that called Revolutions Per Minute. There was also these EPs that came out, which not too long ago, which were real good. I want to talk about what you're doing now. I want to include these calls, and the time is rapidly running out. There's a few other things we need to hit on. So you guys continue to hold. We're going to get to you on the phones, and we're going to touch on a few other things with Snake. We'll go right to the end of the show. And again, if you're in the New York, New Jersey area, catch the band playing the four shows we just mentioned. We'll hit them a couple more times before we wrap up. Let's hit a commercial break right now. We'll come back more with Snake from Skid Row right after this.
Go Giants.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, so if you guys are looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively, so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
2017 was a great year for us here at Podcast One, and we hope it was a great year for you.
We launched new shows with Caitlin Bristow, Jim Harbaugh, Dick Enberg, and Randy Jackson.
We've had some amazing guests stop by some of our shows, like Bryan Cranston on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted,
Julia Louis-Dreyfus on All of the Above with Norman Lear,
and Jason Bateman on Spike's Car Radio with Spike Ferriston.
We are looking forward to a bright 2018 with new shows coming online, like MySpace Tom Anderson.
And we are welcoming back Dennis Miller to the podcast scene.
This is Heather Dubrow. Happy holidays! Cheers.
I'm Caitlin Bristow, and I want to wish you happy holidays.
Hey, guys, it's Kelsey Knight from the Lady Gang. Happy holidays. We'll see you in the new year.
From all of us here at Podcast One, we want to wish you a very happy holiday and a happy new year.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
So you go, so you do this, this, and not to gloss over these certain eras because they are important, but in the interest of time, Johnny's in the band for a while, tons of shows with Johnny, open for Kiss with Johnny as your singer.
Yeah, we did the Kiss tour, which was, he was in the band, you know.
The reunion tour.
Yeah, which was incredible.
Amazing.
2000, it was incredible. And just to say that we got to tour with the originals is pretty amazing. For 127 shows or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And that's one of those things that, again, that they were the reason why I do what I do, you know? December 16th, 1977, Madison Square Garden.
Me too.
Garden.
We were the same first. Yep. As a matter of fact, there's a photo of Ace somewhere in this room that Mark Weiss gave me, which he took exactly at that show.
Yes. He sent Mark sent it to me too. Yeah.
That was exactly our same first show.
But yeah, so we did a Kiss tour. We went out and did a tour with Tesla, the Rock Never Stops tour. Went out and did Poison and Vince Neil as well. And a lot of tours, European tour, went out with Def Leppard, went out with Saxon. And then it was 2014 we were out with Saxon. And it just got to the breaking point where it had run its course. And you know, you have to be honest with yourself in this business. You know, you have to be realistic. And by and large, I'm an idealist. I mean, I might not come across as that, but I sit there and you have to be realistic about, you know, I know we're not playing stadiums, you know, I know what we're doing, but I love what we're doing, and I wasn't loving it, nor was some of the other guys at that particular point. And that was like October of 2014.
So that's the end of the Johnny Solinger era. And then a really interesting little footnote slots in here, and that is the arrival of Tony Harnell and the announcement that Tony is your new lead singer, which lasted, 6 months?
Barely.
And I saw a couple of the shows with him. One was shot in Vegas.
Vegas, yeah.
What went on there? What can you tell us about that?
We had known each other. Rachel, Scotty, and I have known Tony for a long time. Obviously, great singer. Some things just aren't meant to work. They just don't work together. And in knowing him before and then working with him, it was two separate. It really was two different things. And a lot of conflict, a lot of butting heads. And it never meshed. It was never right. Again, very talented guy.
How did you not pick up on that before you made him your singer? Did you not see that or feel that in rehearsals or know? You said you knew him for a long time. Did it just become something different that you didn't foresee when you actually put him in the band?
Knew him for a long time, never worked with him.
Right.
You know, never worked in a band situation, band environment with him. So, and again, you know what? For better or for worse, this is our band. It belongs to us. And so if someone is going to come in and work with us, we have a certain way that we do things. And that may not work for some people. It didn't work for him.
And interestingly enough, he went back to his band TNT, but then actually has just parted with them again as well. So he's been in and out of that like 3 or 4 times, it seems like.
Yeah,
so.
It just, you know what? I mean, look, a talented guy, it wasn't right for us.
So there was, and you know this, and you're a rational guy, and you just touched on it before. There has been, you know that there's this persistence from a large part of your fan base that expects and hopes and thinks there's for this reunion. We know reunions are all the rage. We see what's happening with Guns N' Roses.
I'm honored by that.
You are honored by it. How close at any point in the last few years did it come that was there dialogue? What can you tell us about a potential reunion with Sebastian?
Yeah, there was definitely dialogue that was going back and forth, and there was talk about it, and I think everybody was entertaining the idea. And I think really what it ended up being was we realized that whatever it was that tore us apart years ago still existed. And we got offered a lot of money, and you know, there was a lot of stuff that's been said about what happened and tours being booked, and that didn't happen. Tours were not booked. Any offers that came in came through to me and Rachel because it's our band.
They came through me.
Yes,
some of them came through me.
That's right.
I swear to God, to this day,
that's true.
I don't know why, but I do know why, because I have such a history with these guys, all of them, and I still am friends with all of the original band.
Yeah.
There have been promoters. Rod Delsner
right.
came up to me. The guys who do M3 came up
that's
to me
right.
and said, "Hey, take this amount of money to Snake."
I remember
major money. And said, and I go, "Well, I'm sure they have an agent or a man." Well, no, just so I would text you and like, "Hey, you know, if you want to do it, this is real money."
I have those saved. I saved it all.
Yeah.
But and so there was, there was a really good amount of money being offered. And then with the dialogue that went back and forth, it got ugly again.
Well, so how much of it was personal versus how much of it was business?
Well, I'll tell you what, it had nothing to do with money.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know it? Because I'll tell you straight up, no one was making more than anybody else.
Right.
It was, that was one of the things that we said, Rachel and I and Scotty were like, this is easy from that perspective. You know, I'm not going to sit there and do it any other way. But I guess it got to be, it was more about control, I think. Other people having a desire to have more control over this thing than we were willing to give. And it was not about anything other than this is our band.
Right. At the end of the day, you're very honest about that. We've talked about that on this show a lot of times. Most bands, there are one or two people that control and run the band. You and Rachel have consistently been those people. So
it
starts and ends with you guys.
Exactly.
So people that love it or hate what's going on,
right?
You're the guys that make the calls.
Yeah, and this is not ego driven. I promise you. Like I said, it wasn't about me making more money than you or you making more. It wasn't about that at all. It just, I guess, it was the personality conflicts that might have existed. That existed before 20 years ago.
But a lot of bands have that.
Mm-hmm.
And the counter to that people would say would be like, well, there's a ton, Motley Crue hate each other and this and that. And put them on their own bus. They see each other for an hour and a half and they go make everybody happy.
Yeah, but they were miserable.
were
all miserable.
Being in separate
quarters.
Yeah,
and see, that's the thing, man. Like, I don't know. I guess I look at it differently. I really like my life, man. I really like being happy. I have great joy playing Skid Row music now. Not to say that I didn't before, but I'm in this moment in time, I'm extremely happy. My life is awesome. My friends are awesome. The people I make music and jam with, they're all awesome. And so I got to say, it's like, yeah, the idea, the romantic notion of a reunion and the monetary aspect of it is all well and good. But at the end of the day, man, I really enjoy the space that I'm in. I just want to be a good guy. I want to be a good husband, a good father, a good friend, a good brother. And, the way that we existed towards the end, when after Subhuman Race and when everything fell apart, it was misery for everybody, not just me, but for everybody.
Last thing on this, is it okay to say that it's a never say never situation, though?
I always say never say never.
Right.
And that's only, I guess that's that's like my way of not committing to saying no, it will never happen. The chances of it happening, I mean, I would say they're slim to none, but I never say never. But I will say this, is that in this day and age, we live in the moment, man. I mean, I'm living right here, right now, in the moment. And I love having ZP in the band.
Which I want to talk about what's going on now.
Yeah.
So that's a good way to segue. I want to get from Snake what's going on and what Skid Row is now, which is the singer they have, and a little something on him. And then I promise you, we're going to have just a few minutes here, but I know you guys have been holding. I know we're going to get to the calls, but babbling and time always gets short.
Are we allowed to talk about your new show on TV too or no?
Yeah, but not now because I want to talk about the band.
I just want to say you certainly spilled a lot of creative juices coming up with the title of that
I didn't show. Come up with it.
It's really good.
Wasn't my idea.
Sounds like it should be on like PBS right after Antique Roadshow.
Wasn't my idea. So listen, before we run out of time, we'll grab a few calls, but give everybody a little something on what you got now. You got a singer in the band named ZP. How do you say his last name?
Theart.
The Art. Okay, he's South African.
Yeah, he's from Dragon Force.
Right.
And which is, I was always familiar with the band and their reputation, and their music was never in like my wheelhouse, so to speak. So Rachel had become really good friends with him, and when things fell apart with Tony, we had previously done shows in the UK where his band after Dragon Force had opened up for us. And I saw him, and he was a great singer, and but never thought that about him being with Skid Row. And Rachel, as soon as everything fell apart with Tony, Rachel's like, "Let's just give ZP a call." I'm like, "Okay, cool." And so we did, and he flew in, and
you did a bunch of shows with him without really announcing him as your singer. Was that because after Tony, you were a little gun shy?
Yes, exactly.
And you wanted to, before you gave him the official stripes, you wanted to make sure he was going to work.
Exactly. And you know what? Look, he's an excellent person, like a really good guy. Blue collar, hard worker, gets his hands dirty, like sees the crew guys, you know, having a problem with one of the road cases. He's over there helping them. Like, he wants to get in the trenches. He wants to work. And he respects the history of the band. He doesn't attempt to do something so different to shy away from what our catalog is. And he came in knowing, like, he came in auditioning, did like 15, 16 songs. Like, he used to warm up to our stuff. He's really, really well versed and familiar with it. So this has been a really, really easy fit. And it's been a pleasure to be on stage with him.
You know, real quick, something that just hit me that I wanted to ask you and get your take on. You're out there with Skid Row, and you're playing majority of your set, I imagine, is the first two records. And you're out there with the band, three-fifths of the original band. As you know, Sebastian's been out there all over the world playing essentially 90% or more Skid Row songs.
Right.
How do you feel about that? Are you cool with that? Does that help you? Do you think that hurts you? What do you think?
I'm cool with it. I mean, look, it's... We had 9 or 10 years a history together that were pretty phenomenal from a success standpoint. And we had a lot of good times. We did, but there was, unfortunately, the bad times outweighed the good times. And that's why the band stopped in that form. But as far as going out there and doing Skid Row songs, as has every right to, he sang them, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm honored, to be honest with you. I mean, some people might look at it differently. It doesn't bother me. It helps keep our history alive. I'm cool with that.
So if you guys go see the band now, you'll see ZP singing, and so far so good with him. Rob Hammersmith is the drummer. And again, you can see Skid Row playing if you're in the New York, New Jersey area, with 4 shows coming up tomorrow night, New York City, Gramercy Theater, and then Thursday, the Paramount in Long Island, and then Friday, the Wolf Den at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, and wrapping up with a hometown show Saturday in Sayreville at the Starland Ballroom. What's the website? Is it just skidrow.com?
Yeah.
Skidrow.com for all your info and updates and all that. I'm just moving quickly here through this period because we only have like 7-8 minutes, and we do have people waiting forever to get on the air and talk to you. So we'll grab a few calls as promised to close out today's show. This is Paul in North Carolina. He's been waiting over almost 2 hours. Thank you, Paul.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks, Paul.
You're finally way too generous to be waiting for somebody like Snake, but we're on the air with him.
He probably has a question for you, not me.
Well, no, I've been listening, too, and I've been holding the phone up, not to my ear. I'm on my car phone, on a speaker. So, no, I've been listening as well. I just wanted to thank you for making my 1920s the best years of my high school years. I love heavy metal, hard rock, but I could never, and you I'm going to touch on, I won't go how long because I know there's other people want to call, but all these songs that written that came out before year three, I could never find one that I connected to until 18 of Life, Youth Gone Wild, and then, of course, the ballad, the Beat All Ballads, I Remember You, which I saw you on the New Jersey Syndicate tour, one of my very first shows. I remember walking out thinking, they rock better than Bon Jovi. I was like, I was more heavy, and that's what I liked. And then when I saw you again with Kiss, that was like, wow. really come about. And I was like, two different shows, but still rocked hard, still brought it, enjoyed. I appreciate everything. Anyway, good listening. Good talk to you. I'll let you go. Thanks.
Very nice of you to – thanks for calling, dude, and very nice of you to say. Very, very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul, for waiting and listening. Chaz in Jersey. Go ahead, Chaz.
It's an honor to get to talk to you. Huge fan. You brought sunshine to this rainy afternoon. My favorite show, I saw you many times, was when
Snake
Pantera
opened up. Snake is
up.
Just a ray of sunshine, really,
yeah.
Don't you think?
No, he brought sunshine to the day, but
thank
I
you.
Saw you when Pantera opened up for you in New York. What
awesome.
A freaking show that was. But for the fans that don't know, is it true you were a gifted athlete and scouts were checking you out in that kids show you mentioned before? Changed your path, and Mama Snake got a guitar for your brother, and you learned from that, and that's what got you into rock and roll.
It's all true. That's true. I was at the tender age of 13. I was slightly scouted as because I was a pitcher in baseball, and I had a little bit of talent. And then I did. I went to go see Kiss when I was 13. Got back from that show and realized that I wanted to do music for a living, and I didn't know in what capacity. I just knew I wanted to do whatever they were doing. I'm like, Mom, yeah, I'm going to breathe fire. She's like, you're going to join the circus? I'm like, no. I'm like, music, man. And then, yes, one of my older brothers, I have four of them. One of my older brothers had a guitar that he got from Sears, an acoustic guitar, and had a guitar course called the Quick Picking Fun Strumming Home Guitar Course. And he did it for about a month and hated it and failed miserably. And that was my opportunity to outdo my brother.
You think you could have gone somewhere with baseball? Were you good enough?
I don't
in
think
retrospect?
So. To be honest with you, I mean, you know, locally I was good enough, but no.
Right.
No.
Right. That's a tough, man. That is it's almost as tough as breaking into rock and making it in music. So.
Yeah, no, and I don't think so. I think you know what? I think I peaked at 13.
Yeah. In all ways.
Yeah, right. True. I wrote my best songs when I was 12.
Ron in Kansas. What's up, Ron?
Not much. Thanks, Eddie, for taking my call.
Sure, man.
Hey, hi, Ron.
Hi. Thanks for all the music over the years.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for listening.
I just got to tell you, Thick Skin is my second favorite album right behind Slave to the Grind.
Oh, wow.
And
thank you.
A quick story, if I may. Around the time that came out, I was in a bar band, and our singer, as gifted as he was or wasn't, there was no way he was going to sing Sebastian. So when I heard I Remember You Too on Thick Skin, I took it straight to the band and I said, here's a popular Skid Row song we can do. So we did that version every time we played a bar, and every time after we played that, people would come up, how could you butcher that song that way?
well, the band that wrote it did, so you might as well too.
That's what we said. The original Skid Row did it first.
If there was more time, Ron, I'd play people a little clip of that so they could hear it, but we're short on time. But for people that don't know, on Thick Skin, Skid Row covered their own song. They did a radically different version of I Remember You, very sped up,
and
almost
rock.
Like a punk rock version.
Total punk rock.
And
version.
It's very cool, yeah. Actually.
Yeah.
I play it on my radio show all the time just because it throws people. Like, who the hell's doing that?
Yeah,
it's actually
fun.
The band that did it. You know?
It's funny because we knew the reaction that we would get, and that's a big reason why we did it.
Yeah, it's cool. And I've seen you do it where you do both versions of
yeah.
the song live.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. All right, Ron, thank you, man.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, guys.
See ya. Well, my thanks to Dave the Snake Sabo for dropping by and spending some time. Of course, the concerts that he was talking about playing have now since happened. And will a reunion happen? Well, the only hope you have from that conversation is him saying never say never. But it looks like that is not anything imminent. We'll see what comes in 2018. Also, thank you guys for listening. And remember, the Eddie Trunk Podcast is new every single Thursday. Brand new episodes here, podcast1.com and iTunes. And also remember, the interviews you hear originate on my daily radio show on Sirius XM, Channel 106 Volume. Hear me live there talking rock with you and doing these interviews and allowing you to engage into them live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern every day. Replay every night 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget my social media, Twitter, where I'm most active, at Eddie Trunk. Also Instagram, Facebook, at Eddie Trunk. EddieTrunk.com is the website. Trunk Report is my blog. Merch available. All my appearances on the homepage. a whole lot more music news updated daily. I mean, it's a great one-stop place to go keep up with all your favorite bands and what's going on with them in the music news section that Dana Rosen does such a great job putting together. So there you go. Thank you, guys, and I'll see you next Thursday for another all-new episode. And this being the last podcast of 2017, let me wish you all a very, very, very happy, healthy, safe new year. I'll talk to you next week.
Podcast One has new shows on our new app. Check out all the cool features to help you explore our exciting new programming, like America's Lakers Podcast with Jay Moore, Sessions with Randy Jackson, So Random with Corinne Olympios, Attack Each Day, The Harbaugh's Podcast, Not Just Sports with Susie Schuster and Rich Eisen, and Sound of Success, The Dick Enberg Podcast, as well as your old favorites like The Lady Gang, Steve Austin, Shaquille O'Neal, and Adam Carolla. Get the new Podcast One app in the App Store, Google Play, or PodcastOne.com.